thank all of you for your excellent testimony today. Let me begin my first question with Chairwoman Charmaine Edwards. What types of expenses are required in order to repatriate human remains and cultural objects?
I would like to be able to direct that to my NAGPRA coordinator. He can better give you information.
Sure. Please give us your name and title so we'll have it for the record, please.
My name is Bobby Gonzalez. I'm the NAGPRA coordinator for the Caddo Nation, Mr. Chairman. The history of the funding for the Caddo, there are two types of NAGPRA grants. One is considered a consultation/documentation grant, and the larger of the awards. Just a year ago, you know, we were able to receive a $75,000 NAGPRA grant. They're up to $90,000 per year. The other is a repatriation grant up to $15,000. And it's specifically for going and getting collections from universities, museums, or repositories. And it pays the cost for mileage, per diem, and hotel, et cetera. We have submitted a NAGPRA grant basically every year since the funding program. And we've been very lucky to receiving 8 out of 13 NAGPRA grants since the inception of NAGPRA. We have received several small repatriation grants to repatriate objects from Louisiana State University. However, the funding level, it takes around $130,000 a year to operate our office. And to answer your question, we have thousands of human remains on shelves from the East Coast to the West Coast. And if you don't receive a NAGPRA grant, we still have the issues of dealing with those the repatriation every day. And so that there lies a problem there.
Do the museums of federal agencies consult with you on how the items are kept until repatriation can occur?
Yes and no. There are museums, federal agencies, and universities that consult with us under the rules and regulations and the Act, and there are those that does not. A lot of the inventories and summaries, they do not consult on the on drafting those inventories and those summaries. They do not consult on the drafting of the publication of the notices of those inventories and summaries that are going to eventually be published in the Federal Register.
Do they allow you access to the cultural objects for cultural purposes?
Yes and no. They depends on where you're at and who's asking and what state you're in. They do allow access. A lot of times they do not. Sometimes don't allow you access to the information that surrounds the collection. We've been told at some universities, if you want the information, go to the local library and get it.
Let me ask Mr. Titla a question. You indicate that the Park Service interpretation of NAGPRA allows museums to refuse to admit to any wrongdoing. Will you provide more detail on what the Park Service told the working group? Do you have that?
Yeah, I think that what they the Park Service wanted to do was just to call these items cultural items rather than sacred items or cultural patrimony. We believe, the Apache tribe, that if they were to call them cultural patrimony, this would afford the items full respect and a full description of the items that they have. And I think that with cultural patrimony, according to the Apache people, there would be no individual ownership of these items that were taken from the Apache people long ago in the 1800s. A lot of them were taken in the late 1800s by the U.S. Cavalry or by missionaries or other people, agents of museums that came among the Apache people. And the items were taken or bought in some places by these people from medicine people or other people that conducted sacred ceremonies for the Apache people. And we feel that the items were not taken properly, and in order to give them their full respect and to help correct wrongdoing, we think that they should be identified as cultural patrimony or sacred items by the museums.
Okay. I have a couple more questions to others on a second round. Let me go to the gentleman from Washington, Mr. Hastings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question for Ms. Bruning. You heard Director Wink say that the regulations forthcoming on cultural affiliation be any time, and you referenced that in your testimony. Can you give me your thoughts on what you know about those regulations that are forthcoming?
I will certainly try. I believe SAA submitted about 40 pages of comments on the proposed regulations, so we have lots of thoughts. I think our overriding concern is with the apparent push to almost a first-come, first-served approach to resolving the status of culturally unidentifiable human remains and to move towards quick removal out of repositories as opposed to careful efforts to ensure that all possibility of achieving cultural affiliation has been accomplished before a resolution comes to pass on those that truly are unidentifiable as opposed to perhaps presently unidentified. And my understanding from personally from some of my work with Southwestern tribes as well as certainly members of SAA is that there is a lot of ongoing collaboration and effort to continue to look into connections of group identity and to understand thoroughly how both time and space and other elements, tribal knowledge, scientific knowledge, historical knowledge can come to play to make sure that we honor the current descendants and their opportunity to take care of their ancestors and that time limits are not the reason why they fail to have that opportunity.
Well, I look forward to we look forward to those regulations and look forward to your response when you get a chance to see them. So.
I'm certainly, we'll be happy to get that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Gentleman from New Mexico, Mr. Heinrich.
Thank you, Chairman. I wanted to ask Mr. Kippen real quickly what the standard of proof is for cultural affiliation and who bears that burden.
What I will tell you is that if I'm going to give you that answer, I will have to look at my materials and give it to you. And I want to make a point here. The point I want to make is that this is extremely complicated. I never work in the NAGPRA field without consulting the rules. And I do this because my memory, the system does not make inherent sense to most people. And so I'm going to, I think, demonstrate my ignorance before this committee as an attorney, as a former judge, and as a former staffer of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, because this is extremely complicated. I never act, and I will look it up for you, and I know I can give you the correct answer, but rather than do that in this situation, I'm not going to. And the complexity of this law is a point that I want to emphasize. Because it is so complex, because it is so technical, it renders it almost impossible for the people who we want to serve, and the people that we want to serve in this case are the people who are harmed by the status quo. Their difficulty in understanding this process is one of the huge issues that this committee needs to address. And if I might just go on just for a few seconds more. In the training that's offered, in the way that we offer it, it needs to be aligned to the people we are trying to teach. I have one example to offer, and it is probably not the best. There is an organization now that has recently been hired to do the training for the National NAGPRA program. It is a National Preservation Institute. Earlier this year, they announced a grant with the federal money. They were going to train the natives. They issued a notice. The notice went out to Indian tribes and Alaska Natives. They excluded Native Hawaiians. I called them a month later. Well, actually, I called the chair of the staffer who was in charge of it for our national program. Approximately a month later, it was changed. If they don't know, then what does that say about our national training program? It raises questions in my mind, and I raise those questions to the committee and to our staffers. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Kippen. Ms. Krause, I wanted to ask you how common it is for multiple tribes to claim cultural affiliation with particular ancestral remains or sacred objects, and how NAGPRA or how you handle claims that have multiple associations of cultural association.
Well, let me state that in terms of the inventory process that you're talking about, the question you ask is so technical that only an expert, a NAGPRA person, would actually know the answer to it. Okay. But the bottom line is that the tribes would have been consulted in the development of their notice of inventory completion that would have created a cultural affiliation. So it's not uncommon to have many tribes. In fact, our study showed that many tribes are willing to work together to repatriate human remains, whether or not they're affiliated or unidentifiable. So in answer to your question, that it's common, and you know, there are many opportunities to do so.
So in terms of trying to, if there are multiple associations with one object, say, in terms of trying to repatriate that to the appropriate place, how do you balance the interest of multiple tribes, or is that just through a consultation process with all of those players?
Well, again, this is really getting into the minutia, which is one of the challenges for Native people to implement the act.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of an object, many times an object is specific to a family. That's how you're proving cultural affiliation. And so there's stories that go along with an object or cultural patrimony. So they're very specific ways of determining who and what possibly that was affiliated with in the first place.
Okay.
Do you want me to go on, or is that?
No, that's fine. Thank you. Chairman, I'll yield back the balance of my time.
Gentleman from California, Mr. Bacher, is recognized.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kippen, you stated today that tribe needs resources. Can you help us understand and share with us the type of resources that are needed specifically?
Yes, I think I can. Let's understand the status quo. The status quo is that this is an extremely decentralized problem that we're facing here. You have natives from across the country. You have museums and federal agencies that are in the possession and control of human remains and cultural items that are also across the country. I may be in Hawaii as a native, and my remains may be in a museum in Florida, in Boston, you know, wherever, all across the country. So the problem that you're facing is how to figure out how to build a system where it all comes together. And so the question really is about capacity. How is it that we create a system that enables museums and federal agencies to report in such a way, in an understandable way, in a clear way, that the message gets out to people across the country? Now, that is extremely difficult. I think what you really need is you need to improve the database that you now have online. And what I mean here, that it needs to not only be really high-tech, but it also has to be high touch in the sense that people understand it, in the sense that it is accessible, in the sense that you and your staff could go online right now and find out where remains are that you believe are in an institution across the country. I challenge all of you to go onto that website and to figure out whether or not you can find, if you were a detective, whether you could find where those remains are. And so that's why I say this is a capacity problem. It's a technology problem. It's a training problem. And as Ms. Bruning said, it is about building relationships. If I might just one more part of this conversation. You need to have a metric to measure whether or not the capacity that you're building is actually being built. You need to have a metric to understand whether or not those relationships are being improved. You need to have a metric to measure whether or not that data system is working for the people who have to use it. Remember this, if we don't change the status quo, the remains and the sacred items and the cultural items and the funerary objects and the items of cultural patrimony stay where they are. So this is a question not only about funding, it's a question about coming up with a metric, it's a question about management, it's a question about building a better system, and it's a question about doing that now. Thank you.
If I may follow up in reference to a metric that could be developed, you know, it's nice that you can develop a metric, but if you don't have bodies or people who sit on the committee, and this is a question for all of you, do you think there's adequate representation in terms of the committee that reviews in making these kind of decisions from Native Americans? Any one of you?
Because it's my nature to always try and help and answer. Could you restate your question again? Because I think
you think there's adequate representation, mm-hmm. or does there need to be additional bodies or people put on a commission review to make sure that you have the kind of individuals that represent Native Americans to make sure that when you deal with metrics, that somebody is sensitive, that it comes to funding or it comes to burial lands, or it comes to anything else, is that you have a voice at the table. Do you have voices, adequate voices at those tables right now?
I will try and explain that I believe people are talking about the National NAGPRA Review Committee, mm-hmm. and that's set by law, the membership, 7 members. The staff at the National, well, the staff of the Department of Interior, which has been delegated to the National Park Service, do most of the work. And to answer part of the question is, I believe that without any Native Americans working in the office, there are currently none, that's an inherent weakness in the program. As to the review
committee. Could you repeat that again? There are how many?
Zero.
How many? Zero.
In the history of the Act, in the history of the implementation at the National Park Service, I believe there's only been one Native American who's worked there. They have a Canadian Indian right now, fabulous person, but it's Indian law. It was created for the benefit of Indian tribes and Native Hawaiian organizations.
Thank you. Anybody else want to attempt to answer that or not? No. Or repeat anything that you need representation?
Yeah, Steve Tetlow from San Carlos Apache for the Apache Working Group. We've been to 4 review committee hearings with the review committee. And I think that the review committee has done a good job because they decided for us because we were in the right. At any rate, I think that as Mr. Colin Kippen indicated, he was a former committee member, and he said that 2 days before the hearing, he would get a big binder of materials to go through and did not get adequate time to really review the material and find out the issues involved. And I think that that talks about too few committee members. What I would recommend is that there be more, perhaps double the committee members, and maybe have the committee members in regional, take care of regional issues. For example, we have Apache issues in Arizona and New Mexico. Perhaps you can have a regional committee member that will address that area only, and then have other committee members that will address Hawaii, the Southeast United States, Northeast United States, Northwest United States, because there are so many tribes, and Hawaii included, that all the issues are different among the tribes, so that if you can have experts from regional areas that will address those respective tribes, then I think that you can get more work done, and these people on the committee can understand the specific issues that will be involved with them. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much. That's something for us to consider as far as regional areas for representation to make sure that we have sensitive voices that will deal with the different perspectives. Let me ask this question of Chairwoman Brenda Edwards. You mentioned the lack of funding and access to grants. Based on your experience, what type of training or outreach must be implemented to help tribes like the Caddo Nation of Oklahoma go through the NAGPRA process?
Thank you for your question, and again, I would like to direct it to my NAGPRA coordinator who works with these every day. But if I may take a minute of your time while Bobby is getting up here, I would like to offer to the NAGPRA Review Committee to come out to our tribe and Caddo Nation of Oklahoma to come out, and they can accompany us on a repatriation so they can see hands-on the extent of what Bobby and my other two employees go through on a daily basis, so that maybe they could better understand our process, because each tribe repatriation, it varies. And there are 37 tribes in Oklahoma alone, and each tribe has their own process. And I think it would be beneficial to the review committee to come out and actually have hands-on experience with the repatriation.
Thank you, Chairwoman. Bobby?
Sir, could you repeat the question?
Sure. Based on experience, what type of training or outreach must be implemented to help tribes like the Caddo Nation of Oklahoma go through the NAGPRA process?
Sir, to be honest with you, to answer your question, I don't think you could have anyone show us the process, and because it's real tedious work. We've been at it for a long time. We actually know how to look at these inventories and summaries. To answer your question, a lot of the tribes, like the 37 tribes in Oklahoma that are federally recognized, most of them don't receive federal funds when it comes to NAGPRA grants, have ever repatriated remains, or even have an office. They're still in the dark a lot on how this NAGPRA process works. As far as the inventories and the summaries and the consultation, that's you really need to sit down with tribes and go over what to look for in an inventory, what to look for in a summary, and how to tear that apart and actually look at the information that that institution or that university or that scientist is looking at that determines cultural affiliation or how they came up with the definitions to fit the rules and the regulations. So it's real tedious. I'm going to give you one example. We have a collection right now that we're documenting. The human remains are split up in institutions across the United States. Louisiana State University has human remains. Louisiana State Exhibit Museum has the associated funerary objects that were once with those individuals at a known site on the Red River. However, the Smithsonian has skulls related to that same site. And the Northwestern State University in Natchitoches, Louisiana, has a baby burial and an eagle that's associated with that site. So we have the burden to put this back together so we as a tribe could rebury our ancestors closest to where they come from. And that's a whole other issue. So to answer your question, when you find the answer, I'd like to know the answer to that. Training needs to happen in Indian country. Where we're at in Oklahoma, we hardly see the training. And a lot of the Repatriation Review Committee meetings happen in Hawaii or Florida or some other location. And tribes, some tribes like us, don't have the resources to travel and get to listen to what's going on in the NAGPRA world. So I hope that helps a little.
Well, I think you've answered it by saying that there is lack of training. There isn't the training that needs to be done. So, I mean, that's an awareness on our part in terms of what needs to be done, and we can convey that because you can't do anything on the process unless you have the training in order to implement that process, and you need the funding, and you need the sensitivity, too, as well, in terms of making sure that we have bodies or people there as we look at funding, because we know that out of sight, out of mind when it comes to Native Americans on all issues, unless someone is, as I stated before, at the table and can address the issues that have been there from the past to current.
Sir, if I may?
Yes.
There are Natives across the U.S. and Native Hawaiians that are experts in this law that can help provide the training and provide an avenue to help other tribes and institutions and museums and universities and federal agencies on a better outcome and partnership and trust and relationship and getting this worked out. I just wanted to...
Thank you. I yield back the balance of my time since I have no time.
Thank you.
Let me ask Ms. Krause a question. The Maka Tribe study recommended that the National Park Service Program develop a consultation policy. Why is this necessary?
Well, thank you very much. Consultation is a bedrock of the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act. And in our 11-plus years of work with how to implement tribal consultation, we found that most people, most federal agencies have a policy on how to conduct, on the fact that they must do tribal consultation, but they don't have a protocol, a step-by-step process to follow in what it means to actually conduct tribal consultation. So in other words, you know, I know that I have to consult with the National Park Service, but there is no policy that says this is the process. A letter comes from this official at this rank to the tribe and these people at the tribe, and then we sit down and participate in discussions. There's no such step-by-step protocol. Without that, it's my belief that you really don't have tribal consultation. If you don't have an upfront process that you understand, both parties, both sides have agreed to, that this is how we're going to, you know, negotiate and talk with each other. And if one side holds all the cards and doesn't always say this is how it's going to be done, this is when it's finished, this is, you know, the ultimate result that we're shooting for, I don't believe it's an open and transparent process.
Thank you. What is your understanding of the current process for publishing a notice of inventory completion?
Well, by the law stated that by 1995, federal agencies and museums had to consult with Indian tribes and Native Hawaiian organizations to do this first broad wave of cultural affiliation discussions. That's tribal consultation in action right there. And by May 16, 1996, they were to notify in writing all Indian tribes and Native Hawaiian organizations that they had determined these cultural affiliations. A copy of that notice went to the National Park Service. The National Park Service is designated by law to publish the notice in the Federal Register. And I think just to point out, then, this is where there is perhaps a weakness in the process, is there is no deadline for how long the Park Service can have one of these notices of inventory completions that's, you know, announcing cultural affiliation. There's no deadline on how long they have to publish it in the Federal Register. In our earlier comments and discussion points, you've heard mention of a backlog, or, you know, there are 300 notices waiting, 225 notices, 79 notices. Those were all supposed to be submitted by May 16, 1996 to the National Park Service. In the Macaw report, we included a letter of one of these notices, and it states that the National Park Service, the Grand Canyon National Park, had affiliated human remains to about 10 tribes in the Southwest. They submitted that, you know, by law, and they complied with the requirement to report it, and they sent a copy to the National Park Service. The National Park Service had that pending notice of inventory completion for over 12 years when they decided to withdraw it in the year 2007. And I believe that 12 years is too long to have something waiting to be published in the Federal Register.
Thank you. Ms. Bruning, your written testimony questions the transparency of the National NACPRA office with respect to funding, enforcement, and dispute resolution. But why do you think the National NACPRA office is not transparent in these areas?
I think it's not a matter of intentional lack of transparency as much as it's the difficulty of having access to accurate and open information as the process currently stands. Part of that may be a funding issue to be able to have the ability to develop the website, make materials available. I think that certainly in the last 5 years, as I've watched things unfold, there's been an increasing access and transparency to certain information, which has been wonderful on the databases, for example. I think some of our concern is about understanding how decisions are made, whether it's decisions about assessing nominations for the review committee and selection process, or whether it's decisions about how grants are assessed and granted and funding is allocated among parties. So from some of our constituents, and we certainly are not here representing museums or tribes, and they are the ones that are more involved in, for example, the grant-making process. But in terms of archaeologists who are working with both museums and tribes trying to move forward on repatriation, There are concerns about understanding how the process unfolds, how they can best proceed with accessing funding and information to address the repatriation concerns.
The review committee recommended that the National Park Service consider the review committee's recommendations made in 2000 for the proposed 10.11 regulations regarding the disposition of culturally unidentified human remains and associated funerary objects. Did your organization agree with the review committee's recommendations?
It's my understanding that SAA has been supportive of those recommendations, and particularly the idea of regional solutions and working rather than trying to come up with a single one-size-fits-all solution. My recollection is that the review committee advocated for more customized, careful regional discussions to come up with proposed solutions, and certainly SAA would support that approach in preference to some of the structures we see in the most recently proposed regulations.
Okay. Mr. Kippen, you, in your opinion, what do you think the state of the NACPRA data is, and why is accurate data so important?
My opinion is that the state of the data can be much improved. I also think that the accessibility to the data, the understandability of the data, could be much improved. And the reason I think data is absolutely crucial is because we want as a best practice to make decisions based on data and information. And when we make decisions, we want to base those decisions upon accurate data and information. So if you don't have accurate data, or if you don't have data, or if you can't access the data, then you really don't know what it is, how it's going. And I think that's absolutely crucial. It's crucial, I think, for this committee, because you're sitting at 30,000 feet trying to look down and understand what it is you can do to make this work better. You have the staff at the National NAGPRA who are actually on the ground. But what we need is we need that intermediate piece where we have a set of clear goals, clear metrics, which will help you to do your work and will help them as well, so that when they come and report to you on, I hope, a frequent basis, that when they do report, that you're able to see that they're making progress on these issues having to do with accessibility to information, on issues having to do with their knowledge and their capacity to work the process, on the museums and the federal agencies' understanding of the process and how they're doing with respect to their collections and the items and the remains that they're holding. So the whole system is dependent upon data. And I think the way that you make it all work is to be clear at a higher level about what it is we're going to measure them against. Because really, what gets measured is what gets done. So you need a measure. Now, I want to just add one thing. There is a measure that I know has been addressed. It was addressed by Mr. Wenk when he testified. It was also addressed by some of the people on this committee, on this panel, and that was, I'll tell you what it is, the metric was the number of inventories in the backlog. That was a metric. High number of big backlog. Before, now we have a little backlog. Well, there are a number of strategies that one could implement to take the backlog from a big backlog to a little backlog. It appears that I'm not really clear what that strategy was, but I do know that notices were sent back. Notices were sent back and not published by the National NAGPRA office. And in my opinion, that is not a strategy that works for me. I would say that if you're going to be sending back notices to be able to reduce your backlog, there needs to be an inquiry into that. And I think, and I will assume that that was what your office has been attempting to do, to understand how we went from big backlog to little backlog and what was the process by which we got there. I will say that some of the members, myself, I did ask questions about this over 2 years ago, because under the law, 5, 6, and 7, this committee is supposed to oversee that whole process. And again, without data and information, how do you make a good decision? So it's clear. Data is absolutely the touchstone. It is the pole star. It is the star that we need to be driving toward all the time so that we can make the best decisions.
Thank you.
Jeremy Washington. I just want to thank the witnesses here. I found this kind of a fascinating discussion, so I want to thank all of you for being here. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, thank you for having a hearing on this. As I mentioned in my opening statement, it's rarely a bad idea to review those areas and where we're responsible, so I thank you for that.
No further business. Any concluding comments by the witnesses? I'll give you that opportunity. Yes, ma'am. Ms. Krause.
Well, I'd like to, again, NAFPO works with tribes around the country, and we don't have a lot of wealthy tribes that are members. And, you know, in terms of thinking about today's hearing and what, you know, why do they care so much about this act? You know, how can they be part of it? How can they take advantage of this? Because it's for their benefit. They, you know, they have a lot of personal reasons for wanting to repatriate items. This is a repatriated item I'm wearing today. I wore it on purpose. And you have no idea how important this is for me to wear. No idea how important it was, how important it is for some little old lady in Cake, Alaska to know that I'm wearing this today. And so in terms of this act and how it's become such a technical, lengthy process, and how Native people were forced to just go from 0 to 60 and accelerate it to the point where we knew the process, we could learn it and make it work for us, thank goodness some tribes were able to make the process work for them. Unfortunately, I think a lot of tribes aren't able to make it work for them. They're the small tribes, the tribes that don't have capacity. I think the Caddo Nation has made a pretty compelling case that they just don't have the staff. They don't have a casino. Economic development in Indian country is incredible unemployment that continues to be ignored. 50% unemployment, 80% unemployment. So how does NAGPRA work for those who, you know, can't afford a person to do NAGPRA? For, you know, we've now watched tribes have to hire lawyers to get some of their items back, to get some of their human remains back. Not every tribe can afford to hire a lawyer to do this. So I guess my plea is that, you know, the act is working for some tribes, but unless you have access to a lot of resources, this is just not really serving the audience that it was intended. So I appreciate all your help that you can do on this act. Thank you very much.
Beautiful comments. That's, you couldn't have described our goal better. Any further comments from the panel? Anybody? Yes, sir.
I would just like to, again, say that I think the issues that face the implementation of this act are systemic, and that you need to have a systemic approach to how you're going to address them. And to the extent that we are clear in what those benchmarks are, what those measures are, what those metrics are, I think that we could improve it. And I think it will greatly improve your ability as an oversight committee to get the kinds of answers you need to be able to make the act better. The other thing I want to say is I want to be absolutely clear that I think part of the objective in my coming today is to send a message to the administration that they need to put some time and some energy and some resources into helping create these systemic improvements and these metrics, so that at the end of the day, you will, and all of us, will be able to make sure that this act is moving forward. Thank you for your time and for listening.
Thank you. Again, thank the witnesses for being with us today. No further business. The committee stands adjourned.